I'm here in Lisniski and I'm talking to Richard Bell. Richard, your address is near to New Tom Butler, isn't it?
Yes, just about 2 miles outside the town.
Oh, what's the town's name?
The townland is Derrydoon. It's South Galloon Island direction.
And did you grow up on the farm there?
Not on that particular farm. I grew up on another farm but half a mile from the town. And then we bought this out farm in 1970. December 70.
What's the address of the
home
place
farm? Is Drumquilia, Newtown Butler. It's about a half a mile from the town.
And did the Bells farm that land for many generations?
No, my father was the first generation on it. And then my brother, Robin, the older brother, he came home to farm. And then this other farm, 2 miles up the road, came up for sale. And they bought it in December 70.
And so your father originally came from, where did the Bells come from?
The Bells always come from Newton Butler. Well, my father's generation did. My mother's generation was actually a Cork woman.
Oh, go away, yeah. And what was her maiden name?
Nugent.
Yeah.
And then they had trouble with the IRA down there in Cork.
Oh, during the troubles down there?
Yeah, way back in the early 20s.
Whereabouts in Cork did she live?
Clonakilty.
Oh, yeah.
Her mother was a school teacher in a church school or something like that, but she had brothers in the British Army. And the IRA visited one night and said the boys were home from the army, and she said they weren't. So that she lived in a house belonging to the school. And so took them out of the house and burnt the house. But they weren't home, but they didn't take the word for it.
Tell me the address of that house.
I couldn't tell you.
You can't remember.
Clonakilty's all I know. We used to hear my grandmother talking about it years ago.
Oh, that's fascinating.
I don't know what her mother did, but she moved up north and she was working in a Castle Freak. She worked there as a maid, and that's where she met her husband.
What was her husband's name?
Johnny Bell.
Oh, that was your...
My grandfather.
Grandfather.
Yeah. So then...
And they met in Castle Freak.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's interesting.
Uh-huh.
And they both came north then?
Both came then to Newton Butler to live. So...
So your grandfather was a Cork man then?
No, he was... He lived around the border at Dromoli, not far from Cavan.
Yeah.
Just sort of on the border. And I don't know how he got in with my grandmother, but so that's how they met. And then my father, he grew up in Newtown Butler.
Yeah.
Went to school there, and
what was your dad's name?
Sydney. So.
And then and your grandfather's first name, can you remember that?
Johnny.
Johnny, yes. Uh-huh. So. But your dad, Sidney, bought the land outside Newtown Butler, and that was the home place. That's where you were brought up.
Yeah, and actually he was left that farm. It was an old man, was on his own. He never was married or anything, and my mother took him in and minded him and nursed him till his end. And he left him the farm then.
And what was his name?
Johnny Beatty.
And then, so... what was it like growing up in your early days, in the 50s and 60s?
When I was growing up, it was great. There was no talk of troubles or anything else, you know. And everybody mixed with everybody. I mean, we walked to school and we met with both sides of the house, walked to school together, and then they went to their school and we went to our school. And
when Did you go home on the bus together, though?
No, we walked because we're living beside the town.
Oh, yes.
And then when I went to secondary school in Lisniski, it was a mixed school at that time. There was both Protestant and Catholic at it. And we all travelled together on the bus, no problems whatsoever. But it wasn't until then, the late 60s, when the civil rights movement got going, and then the whole thing changed, sort of thing.
So what... When did it reach your door? When did the troubles... When did you first... have a problem with the trouble? When did you know it came, when he was there?
I suppose around 71, it started to, well, what would you say, come home to us that there was a problem and was getting serious. And my brother, he was on the B-men. And then when it was disbanded, then he joined the UDR.
Was that part-time?
Yes, all part-time.
Yeah.
And then I joined the UDR then when I was 18. And that would have been in 1971.
Why did you want to join the UDR?
Well, I suppose a lot of it was our comrades that we run about with. We're in the B-men and then transferred to the UDR and sort of went with them type of thing, you know. There was a bit of crack on the roads at night, you know. It wasn't all serious. It was a bit of crack and camaraderie, and TV wasn't that popular at the time, and it was.
And so the whole idea
certainly a social life to it.
Yeah, that's interesting. And the bit of soldiering, was that, you know, wearing the uniform?
Yeah, probably. Uh-huh. And then it got serious then, and there was a comrade shot in Mahravila, Creighton, Harry Creighton. That was the first in that area.
He was a neighbour of yours, wasn't he?
No, he was Mahravila. He'd been lived about 4 miles away.
Okay.
And then there was the Latimer brothers. They lived near Hand, where we had the farm now, and they were fired on a couple of times. And fired into the yard from the south, and then they moved out.
And then there was one of the Latimers was killed, wasn't he?
That's right.
In his own shop.
Sometime afterwards, in their own shop, yeah.
Uh-huh. Was he the same family?
Same family, yeah. It was two brothers farming, and the third brother was in the shop in the town.
Okay.
But after they were fired a couple of times on the yard, then the next thing was we were ambushed. And then they left the farm, moved to Listerski.
Who was ambushed? My
brother and my father and I. The three of us were in the car when we were ambushed.
So what happened?
Well, it was one Sunday morning, 22nd of October, 1972. We left home to go out to this out farm. We just started milking on the out farm. And we left home and went up the road, and just as we turned in the lane into the out farm, my father was driving, my brother was in the front passenger seat, and I was in the back seat. And just as we turned in the lane, three guns opened up on us. I realised what was happening. I had a personal protection pistol on me, and I returned fire with it. It was enough to stop them for a few seconds till we got up over the sort of the brow of the hill. But my brother, he died on his way to hospital. At that time, there was no telephones in the area. The phone exchange had been blew up. And the only phone was in the police station. So there was a man living in the house on that farm at the time. And he went into the police station and told them what had happened. But by the time the ambulance came out, and
Your brother bled to death.
He basically bled to death on the ambulance. He was only 21 and I was 19, and there was 32 bullet holes in the car.
My goodness. And were you hit yourself? Or
no.
Was your father?
My father had a bullet born there at the back of his ear.
Yeah.
Close enough. And that was basically what happened. They escaped. They went on up the road about a half mile, and then across about 100 yards of land, and then crossed about 50 yards of water into the south at Beltorbet.
Who claimed responsibility?
Nobody actually claimed responsibility, but it's...
Who did it? Do you know who did it?
IRA.
But do you know personally who did it?
Nobody ever was got for it. I have my own thoughts on who was a...
But do you think it was local?
There had to be a local to point the finger and plan it. I mean, I couldn't go, we'll say, to Cavan, pinpoint somebody, set it up, and carry out an ambush. There has to be a local knowledge.
Okay.
And I have my suspicions, but I can't prove it, so I'm not going to say anything. Two of them are dead. The third one, well, he's not dead, but he's not that well.
But you'd often meet him?
Oh, aye.
How do you feel when you meet somebody like that?
You try and ignore them.
I asked somebody else this question before. Define, who are the IRA? Who do you think these people are?
Terrorists. At that particular time, it was ethnic cleansing was going on around the border. Now, all the Protestants were getting targeted in the border.
Okay.
And they even shot men that wasn't on the UDR at the time. They fired into Protestant men's yards that had never had to do with the security forces. And it was just a case of ethnic cleansing, I think. And but then the thing is, after our murder, the day my brother was buried, there was two other neighbours murdered, and it eventually came out that it was the soldiers that did it.
Do you think that that was a kind of a reprisal? People say that.
People say that. I don't know what the soldiers were thinking, what happened. I don't know. But at the time, when it happened, people thought that I had something to do with it as a reprisal for my brother. And there was a fear in the nationalist population at that particular time that we were going to take out and return the compliments, as the man says. And everything went very quiet. And then when it come to light that it was the soldiers that killed...
This is the Nan Murray.
Yeah. When the soldiers... When it come to light that they had did that, then things broke loose. We had Richie Latimer shot in his shop, we had Bobby Crilly shot in his garage, we had Victor Murray, who wasn't on the UD at the time, shot walking in the road to go to his work. And, you know, it's...
Yeah, murders after murders. Yeah. And the Nan farm, that was beside yours.
It was, yeah. It was beside ours, yeah.
You knew
these people? Oh, I knew them well. Like, Mickey Nan used to get the lend of syringes off my father and that sort of thing to inject cattle and that type of thing. You know, like, we knew them well.
And were they involved themselves?
There again, I've no proof. Young Murray that was with Nan, I'd say I was only an innocent lad. It happened in the wrong place at the wrong time. Seen too much. And the soldiers got rid of him too. That's my belief on it. Nan was always... what would you say? It was general knowledge among the UDR that he was connected. But
would he display a green, white and gold flag on his land?
No, he didn't do that sort of thing. No, he was a, what would you say, quiet going sort of a fella. Didn't get too prominent in his actions, but behind it he was there. Some even reckoned he was a recruiting officer. But
yeah,
no proof.
What was it like when you got the blame for this?
Well, I suppose I couldn't say I actually got the blame, but I imagine people were thinking, had I something to do with it? Because it was only over the hill from our house to their house where it happened. There was for a number of years, if you met the people on the road, now there was no Protestants living in our area at the time because they'd all left, and I was the only ones out there. And when you met your neighbours, there was no wave, salute. They sort of pushed past, met them in the town, you got a grunt and they walked on type of thing, you know. Some didn't even give you a grunt. There was that coolness, distance. And then after it came out that it was a soldier, you could see the thing gradually coming round. And at the latter end there, in fact, at the present time, if I want help to calve a cow or anything, it's my Roman Catholic neighbours I go to. If they want help, they'll give me a shout to go and help them out at times.
Yeah.
You know, since it's all gone back to what it was when I remember it in the 60s, before any civil rights or anything else.
Yeah.
Except for one or two, as I call it, hardliners.
Were you bitter. I mean, can you imagine your brother shot and killed in front of you and you escaping?
The intention was to wipe the three of us out. I mean, that number of holes in the car, it wasn't a single person targeted.
Yeah. When you were on duty then, the following weeks and months...
I didn't go back on duty.
Oh, did you not?
I didn't, no, because... my parents were going through a big enough strain without me going out on the road. And I held on to the uniform for the sake of holding on to the rifle. And then after most of 12 months, I was told I was going to have to go back on duty or else. So I said, no way. We weren't treated very well by the government.
Which government?
The British government.
Yeah, but why?
Stormont, whatever you want. Well, maybe Stormont wasn't there at the time. You were just a number. There was a big show the day of his funeral. He got a minister's funeral. It was a big show that day, and they were going to do all sorts for us. And that's where it ended. Now, detectives come out for a few times afterwards, and from that day to this, the last time I spoke to a detective was at his inquest.
It's a long time ago.
It is, 45 years ago.
And did you?
And nobody ever got for it. And as far as I'm concerned, the books are closed and forgotten about.
And do you think? I mean, this was murder.
Yeah.
So, do you think that somebody is out there walking free that killed your brother and tried to kill you and your father?
Well, if they're not walking free, they're dead. Because they didn't do jail for it. But they'll meet the maker. They have him to meet.
And so, does that make... Again, it's important that, you know, I understand this. So, do you then think worse of your Irish nationalists?
No.
People?
No.
Because of all what happened?
No. Not the general population, no. No problem with them. I can meet them, speak to them, and no problem. It's the few hardliners. And it's only a few hardliners keeping the thing going.
Yeah.
No, I have no problem with my nationalist population. It's all mostly nationalists living around me, and I have no problem with them whatsoever.
And... Well, do you think there must be a reason? You say it's ethnic cleansing. They wanted you out so
that
the land could be come up for sale or whatever.
Yeah. They didn't want to have anything. I think the aim was they were going to move the border in bit by bit. And unofficially they had done, because there was areas that the police wouldn't go into. And I suppose unofficially they had moved the border in. And I don't know. It's, at that particular time, it was rough around the border now.
But
you didn't know who your local was that had pinpointed you. You didn't know who the gunmen were, that there was three guns on the job. And there was the driver in the getaway car. It was a hijacked car.
So there were four of them all together?
Actually four involved. And
did you get a look at it? Well,
no, I didn't see anybody. Didn't see anybody or anything.
Yeah.
Because when I heard the shooting, I lay down in the back of the car, I pulled the pistol and I just put up my hand and fired out through the window.
Yeah.
Because there was no point in firing back because I was out of range.
Yeah.
And a pistol again, three rifles. Well, it wasn't a great match. So it made a noise.
Yeah, of course, and the fact that they were trying to drive you away from your land, did that make you and your father then and tougher, harder, wanting to stick it out.
It did. It did. Now, several relatives come at us, oh, you'll have to move. The Latimer's moved and they're still alive, and somebody else moved and they're still alive, and an uncle, two uncles actually moved, and a good friend was on the UDR with us, he moved from his farm as well. And I said, there's no way. I said, well, move me out of here, they'll take me out in the box. I dug in the heels, and my father said, well, I'll back you. And it was rough. Now, I'll be honest, it was rough for a while. You didn't go the same route. You tried it, well, there was a one way in and one way out on the road. You didn't always use the lane to the farm. You drove away in, past it and crossed fields into the yard. Had a good look round you before you touched anything in the yard. You always left doors open that you go into houses and have a look round you before you had to open a door in case there'd be booby trapped. We were milking there at the time, so you had to go twice a day to do the milking. And we went different times, and I went out to bring in the cows. I carried the rifle with me. I had the rifle and the tractor with me. And you're always looking over your shoulder.
Well, that was not a... And you had to live like that. I mean, they were strange times, weren't they?
Oh, they were. I wouldn't like to see them come back.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't like to go through it again. And then there was the strain on my mother. She was down at home in the home place.
Yeah.
She didn't know what was going on with my father and I. There was no mobile phones that time. There was no phones in the
Oh, she was
times.
Living in the other
She was down
farm.
At the other farm, yeah. And she was there on her own in the daytime. And we were building at the time, as I say, we bought it in 70. We put in a milking parlour in 71. And then this happened in 72. And we still hadn't the building project finished. And we were there up there most days, all day. She was at home worrying what was going on, no way of contacting us. She couldn't drive. And it was hard on her, maybe more than us.
Yeah, of course. And but the result of all of that is that it was in your family for so many generations. Your mother, her family were forced out. Her grandmother was forced out of there.
My father's mother.
Your father's mother, yeah.
Yeah, she was forced out when she was a child.
Yeah.
Or it'd have been my father's grandmother.
The Nugents.
Nugent,
from,
was
from,
Nugent, yeah.
West and so then they, mm-hmm. and then all it was a recurrence. It was that again.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Well, I didn't know anything about it actually till afterwards.
Yeah,
I said, "Oh, it just hit the family again," you know.
Yeah. So you told me that you you don't take this out in as a grudge or bitterness against the nationalists.
No.
And so do you think you're coming from West Cork, how would you define yourself? Are you an Irishman?
No, British. Born and bred, and like I didn't know where it come from until I was grew up type of thing, you know. Didn't know that when my father was born and reared in Newton Butler.
Yeah.
My mother was born and reared in Newton Butler. And I was born and reared in Newton Butler. So that doesn't make me an Irishman.
Yeah. But you're in the Ireland of Ireland. Is
it? I'm in Britain, but... Or yeah. UK.
Well, that's a fair comment.
I have a British passport.
Yeah. How have you told your story to many people, other than the detectives who came to you in the 1900s.
Well, there was somebody over from Spain, a reporter over from Spain there back, 6 months or more ago, through Seth.
Yeah.
And we came in and told them the story. There was a TG4 programme done.
Yeah.
And they come out to the house and...
And was that all about the Nan?
Yeah, it was basically in Nan, Murray and Eric case, because the three were together.
Oh, yes.
Basically, it was... Yeah, they interviewed me and then they interviewed Nan and Murray, and there was a programme made on it, and it was on the TV on TG4.
Okay, and how did you feel about that? Were you...
Well, I felt that my side of the story needed to be told.
Yeah.
Because what I was concerned, originally I wasn't going to have anything to do with it. And then I felt, well, if I don't, somebody else is going to put my side of the story over to just to... put the two sides together.
Yeah.
And I felt, well, if I'd had it, I'd had to hear the tape and that before it went out.
Yeah.
I felt that my side of the story got there. But my side of the story is only an introduction, really, to the Nan Murray case and the soldiers. It was, ended up, I think it was a case of downing the soldiers for what they did. But don't get me wrong, I don't praise the soldiers for what they did. Murder is murder, no matter where it comes from. Yeah. I never thought in my, come into my head, that people should be killed in reprisal for any murder.
Yeah. Well, I will say it is an extraordinary story, and to live in fear and watch over your shoulder and be in that way.
Well, you lived in fear, there's no doubt about it. You slept with a pistol under your pillow.
And you got married and you settled down yourself.
Yeah.
So what's your wife's name?
Gladys. She lived over at Atherton Sea.
What was her maiden name?
Elliot. And we got married in 1977. And actually, she worked in the office in the Ski English Cotton Sewing Factory. And along with nephew of Michael Nans, it was murdered. He worked together in the office. And she said, you're a nice, quiet fella to work with, and that sort of thing. And it's strange, you know, how the stories go. But Newtown Butler area, I suppose you could say nearly Fermanagh area, was different to a lot of the rest of the north in that there were a lot of Protestants killed, but there was no reprisals for it.
Not like
Belfast.
Yes.
You know, those reprisals for killing and then somebody else got killed and that's the way it went on or that. But in this area, it didn't. We didn't believe it. We called murder, murder, no matter who committed it.
Right, but why so did you say stay so? I mean, if you had a gun and you were out and you saw somebody who was an IRA man, you'd shoot him.
But she didn't know whether he was or not. We had no proof he was an IRA. I mean, they didn't come up with a uniform on them and a flag saying I'm an IRA man. They could have been your next door neighbour and you didn't know it. You just had to be suspicious.
Yeah, but so why do you think there was no reprisals?
That wasn't our belief. We, I suppose you could say we were more, let's hopefully say we're overly religious, but we're more Bible-fearing people, believed in the commandments, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not commit a murder or whatever. Leave it to our maker. At the end of the day, he'll sort them out, one way or the other.
But putting on a uniform and going out armed...
If we put on the uniform and went out armed and come under attack, no problem returning fire. I mean, the day I was ambushed, I had no problem returning fire. If I had been able and knew I had a weapon capable, I would have taken aim to take those people out.
Yeah.
That wouldn't have cost me a thought. That was a fair battle. But the way it's done, you're shot in the back. You don't know it.
But some people would call that guerrilla warfare.
Call it what you like. I think it's terrorist. Just terrorist.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, they were just terrorists. They called it a war. Yeah. They had a war against the British. I wouldn't call it a war.
But some of the, say, the Republicans or the Nationalists would say that as soon as you put on a uniform, you become a target.
Yeah, of course they do. That's the Republicans more than the Nationalists. I would separate the two.
Oh, would you?
I would. There's a lot of Nationalists have no time for this carry-on. A lot of them. And have told me themselves they have no time for it.
And
it's this few hardliner Republican element that's keeping the thing going on.
Yeah. And so you're still farming away.
Yeah.
And
I happily married and three children, and I have a son now. Planning, he's a vet actually at the minute. He's working part time at a vet, and he'll have a couple of days with me on the farm.
So, do you think the farm will stay with the Bells for another generation?
Hopefully,
maybe?
Hopefully, I'm building a retirement bungalow at the minute, and he's planning on getting married next year and coming home. So.
Oh, that's lovely, Richard. Thanks again. Thanks.